This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Family and Children's Services of Kalamazoo has announced the Capital Campaign. They're planning to expand its facility on Lake Street. The agency, which serves foster children and their families, announced the public portion of their Making Room for Hope campaign. Rosemary Gardner is the Chief Executive Officer of Family and Children's Services. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Let's back up before we get into the details of the Capital Campaign and what you're planning to do, and give a little background on Family and Children's Services.
Family and Children's Services is a fascinating older organization, kind of a landmark organization in Kalamazoo. It was begun in 1903 as the Women's Civic Improvement League, and that kind of morphed into a couple of buildings, took care of vagrant men for a while. It beautified Bronson Park. Their first meeting was with Carolyn Bartlett Crane on the hill, Crane Park, up on that hill. And women philanthropists came from all over. All of the street names are in our minutes from those first meetings. And they gathered to beautify the community and decided it wasn't enough to just make a beautiful park. What do you do with vagrancy? What do you do with young women who had nowhere to go? In Victorian times, a pregnant young woman couldn't go home. So they found day work for the women in wealthier homes. And for the men, they built the home, which was the first home of Women's Civic Improvement League. They called it that Women's Civic Improvement League home. Well, eventually, the Michigan Children's Aid Society, which was the organization over on the east side of the state, where children who did not successfully make placements through Orphan Train, which came out of New York City. Charles Loring Brace was a minister who placed children on a train, and the trains went across the country on the new tracks. They were not legal placements, but when they didn't work out, families brought the children back to what was called Michigan Children's Aid Society. So a branch of that organization was here in Kalamazoo County, and at the same time, the Family Service Center had kind of morphed from the Women's Civic Improvement League. The two merged in 1971 with the blessing of the Kalamazoo Community Foundation and what was then the Community Chest, and we were named Family and Children's Services. And really, that long story summarizes why we are a full-service agency, both child welfare, youth services, and adult counseling, mental health work. It's unusual that you really span both the child welfare side and the behavioral health side, but that's what Family and Children's Services has become. So there's some 30 programs now under our umbrella, and we see about 9,000 people a year, and about half of those, 4,500 or so, are children. So the programs that really were growing and needed expansion were on the child welfare side and the youth development side.
So if you are successful in this Capital Campaign, and from what we've heard, you are definitely well on your way, what will this campaign allow your agency to do that you can't do right now?
Well, we'll expand to actually, we've got to grow We got to grow the space to grow into the size of programming that we have been given or really asked to do by the community over the last few years. We've somewhat tripled, at least tripled, our foster care number of children in care. I have about 110 foster homes, hoping for about 130. And we have really cared for up to 350 children in the last couple of years. And I think the count at the end of this year will be in the mid-200s, 250, somewhere in there. But this is an exponential growth for our child welfare side. And we had been having our visitations occur in what were really office-like, smaller meeting rooms. They were as nice as we could make them, but they were not big enough to really accommodate the state's movement toward family reunification. So now the courts will require that the birth family, even after removal due to abuse and neglect, that they begin to visit with their children as soon as possible after the removal, and sometimes for 3 hours, two or three times a week. So that really is not conducive in an office setting. What we're building will be a family visitation and support center. And we really kind of took off with the idea of trauma reduction, knowing that both the birth parents, who were often raised without top parenting skills, things got in the way, or they became involved in substance use, or they got into domestic violence relationships. These things all bubbled up and created the removal. Most of the parents desperately want to have their children returned home. And we have not really been able, with a physical plant that we're in, really, to accommodate. They're really getting to know the child again. The Family Visitation Center is going to have 7 rooms, just like our family rooms, with furniture and a little table for a dinner or a snack. They'll have sliding glass doors out to a patio with their own little round, you know, patio table, and then from there to a green space with a couple gazebos and children's play equipment. So parents can really be at their best with their children. And these are all observed visits because that's court ordered. So that the observation will change to parent coaching. And we have family support workers who will actually engage the parent in picking the toys, the blocks, the books, the puzzles, the art that's appropriate for the several ages of their children, and then work with them in the family support center in their own little room with their own little bathrooms inside. So everyone's kind of contained, but a more family room-like setting, much more conducive to kind of hope and restoration of family. So that's the front end of the project.
So does this reflect, this capital campaign reflect, that there is a growing demand out there for these services? And is that in response to changes which are being made in terms of the policies which govern foster families?
Right. Yes, the state of Michigan really, under a modified settlement agreement, it's really under a federal court order, has changed the way it does business, and it is now trying to rebalance each county so that half of the children are served through the public sector and half of the children are privatized or served through the private sector. I don't want to say privatized because that's not a popular theme. The theme is rebalanced so that both public sector and private share the responsibility, bear the responsibility of the children from the community, that we all recruit together with our private and public partners, and that the courts, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the private agencies work more closely together to become kind of a unified system for children with the child at the center. And the 3 real key principles for children being safety, permanency, and well-being. So when we really expanded this campus idea for children, we expanded along the lines that the state of Michigan is going. And they're very thoughtful these days about what to do with children. The first line of order will also be relative placements. So if mom is completely unable to deal with or unable to change or turn, say a substance abuse path, grandmother, aunts and uncles will be recruited simultaneously to consider raising the child, and we'll be working with the relatives as well as the birth family.
So the idea is that the first option would be that it is somebody in the family that would take a child if their birth parent is just not capable.
Exactly. Another thought from the state is first placement, best placement. So we're trying to make sure that when we make a placement for a child with a foster family, it's the only foster family that they are with. Because as you can imagine, the window of childhood is very narrow. And when you make these kinds of giant moves in young children's lives, they take half a lifetime to recover from them. So our focus and the way we built the front building that we propose with the help of the community is to really not re-traumatize the child, but to make this that safe place he comes after removal, revisits with his parents and his foster parents together, not separately, so that we're going to try and reduce the animosity and some of the silos between our foster parents and our birth parents. And all of us circle that child with a lot of kind of continuity of care. We want our foster parents to bring in the children's schoolwork, their after-school projects. We've got neat little magnet boards. They'll show all of their good work to their birth parents, kind of unifying and everything, every person that surrounds the child, reducing trauma and keeping kind of continuity of care. And the second thing that's happened in the back part of the project, beyond that green space, we're repurposing a pool and turning it into a youth development center, because what we are doing with our children these days is trying not to send to residential settings children with emotional impairments and developmental disabilities, but trying to do day treatment programs that really strengthen their skill set. So in that building, we'll have large group meeting rooms, and we'll work on social emotional regulation so that people can get in a line, can sit in a classroom without throwing a chair or something. They'll learn what are the triggers that trigger them into poor behavior. So behavior regulation will be a real big part of the project as well.
You mentioned that idea of the first placement being the last placement, the best placement, I guess, is what you would be aiming for. That would seem to require more screening of foster parents and those sort of things to make sure you get the right fit the first time. Is that anything that you're involved in, or are you in some way facilitating that through the services that you're offering?
We are. We're deeply involved with the recruitment of foster parents in our county. We need more foster parents. We've always screened carefully our foster parents. What I think we haven't done enough of is real trauma training, teaching foster parents what's behind behaviors. Generally, and it seems so simple, but an angry child is going to act out. And if the child's angry enough, he's going to act out in such a way that you're going to say, I can't keep this child. And children often, I'm an old therapist, which you'll probably be able to tell, children often want to get the rejection over with early. So the acting out happens early. Let's just get this over with. Let's just get this done and move me to the next place. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to work with parents and hopefully help them understand, oh, Johnny has now triggered, you know, he hit your Achilles and he found it. And children who've experienced rejection read. They have antenna for adults because they don't trust. And not trusting, as you recall in your child developmental stages, is a dangerous thing. If we don't trust young and we aren't able to risk a bit, it's very difficult to develop intimate relationships. So you revisit this again in marriage, you revisit again all through adult life. We'd like to get upstream of that. The other thing the state is doing is funding and developing family preservation programs that go out before foster care occurs. And Family and Children Services has three of those large programs that go into homes before the removal to work very, very intensely with the family to see what is it that we can do to prevent an actual removal. So that's all good work for children.
So what's the goal for the Make Room for Hope campaign?
Well, our goal is $5.1 million. That's what it's going to take to build really those three segments, the Family Visitation Support Center, the Youth Development Renovation, and then to kind of clean up the space we sort of usurped from our counseling center and give that back to them. And with a $5.1 million goal, it is taking a wonderful group of volunteers speaking to foundations and to community members. And the lead gifts were from 250 traditional donors or larger donors of the agency and 31 foundations. They all have responded to put us well over $4.5 million. And we'll hope to come back and at least call you and announce how we're doing, because we really need a shovel in the ground to get this project built, and we're lacking about $500,000-$600,000.
Rosemary Gardner, thank you very much for your time.
And thank you.
Rosemary Gardner is CEO of Family and Children Services. You can find links with more information about their Making Room for Hope campaign at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.